All right, buckle up, everybody, because today we are diving deep, and I mean deep, into Austrian discrimination law.
Ooh, sounds intense.
It is going to be good, though.
Yep.
And to make things even more interesting, we're not using some boring old textbook. Nope. We've got this blog post by Clemens Lintschinger.
I've heard of him.
Yeah. He's not just a lawyer, but get this, he's also a humanist writer. So we know this is going to be more than just dry legal stuff. This guy's passionate about this stuff, you can tell.
That's what makes these deep dives so fun, right? Giving these perspectives you wouldn't find in a regular law book.
Totally. We get to see how the law actually plays out in real life for real people. And that's exactly what we're going to try to figure out today. How does Austria actually protect its people from discrimination?
Sounds like a plan.
But before we get ahead of ourselves, we got to start with the basics. What even is discrimination, legally speaking? Clemens lays it out pretty clearly in the blog post.
He does. And it's not as simple as it might seem. It's not just about being treated differently. It's about being treated unfairly, specifically because of who you are, not what you've done.
Okay, so not every difference in treatment is automatically illegal discrimination, right?
No.
I mean, there's a reason why five-year-olds can't vote.
Right, and that's where this idea of justified differentiation comes in. It basically says, look, there are valid reasons to treat people differently sometimes.
So, like, age restrictions for things like driving. We don't let 10-year-olds get behind the wheel, and nobody's calling that discrimination.
Exactly. It's about finding that balance between acknowledging real differences and making sure those differences aren't used to unfairly disadvantage certain groups.
So where does Austria fall on this whole spectrum? Are they super strict about preventing discrimination, or are they more hands-off?
Clemens actually has a really interesting way of approaching this. He says, instead of asking, where does discrimination happen? We should be asking, where is there legal protection against it?
Ooh, I like that. Flipping the script, huh?
It's a subtle shift, but it really gets to the heart of the matter. By looking at where protection exists, we can see where the gaps are.
Okay, so how's Austria doing in the protection department? Are we talking Gold Star student or room for improvement?
Well, according to Clemens, Austria is definitely more in the room for improvement category. He argues they're kind of doing the bare minimum, especially when you compare them to other European countries.
Yikes, that's not great.
He even uses the word dwindling to describe their approach to anti-discrimination laws. So, yeah, not exactly a glowing review.
I'm sensing a but coming.
But there is a central law that tries to tackle this stuff. It's called the Federal Equal Treatment Act, or GLBG for short.
Okay, so they've got that main law, but it sounds like things are maybe a bit fragmented.
Yeah, Clemens points out that the relevant laws are kind of scattered all over the place. You've got federal regulations, state regulations.
Yep.
Some states are better than others, it seems.
Sounds like a bureaucratic nightmare.
A bit, yeah. And just to be clear, Clemens specifically says he's not going to get into disability discrimination because that's covered under separate laws.
Good to know. So we've got this main law, but it's maybe not as straightforward as we'd hope. So where does this protection actually apply? Is it like everywhere in life?
This is where Clemens makes a really key distinction. He talks about discrimination protection in the workplace versus protection outside the workplace, which he also calls other areas. And you can probably guess the level of protection is quite different between the two.
Okay, that's what I was getting at. Let's start with the workplace then. What kind of protection are we talking about?
Well, Clemens says that when it comes to work, Austrian law actually recognizes a pretty wide range of grounds for discrimination.
Like what?
You've got the ones you'd expect: gender, ethnicity, religion, sexual orientation, age, disability.
Right, the usual suspects.
Exactly. But then it gets interesting. Austria also includes things like parental rights, sick leave, even care leave, as grounds for discrimination protection.
Wait, hold up. Parental rights and care leave. I've never even thought about that. What does that even mean in real life?
Basically, it means an employer can't discriminate against you for, say, taking parental leave, or if you need time off to care for a sick family member.
Oh, okay. So it's about recognizing that people have lives outside of work and making sure they aren't penalized for having families and responsibilities.
Exactly.
Okay. That is surprisingly progressive. Color me impressed. So it seems like Austria has their act together when it comes to protecting people at work. But what about outside of work? Does that same level of protection apply?
This is where things get a bit dicey.
Oh, no. Here we go.
Yeah. Clemens is really clear about the contrast here. Outside of work, the only things explicitly protected under federal law are discrimination based on gender and ethnicity.
What? Seriously?
Seriously. And that means a whole lot of other potential grounds for discrimination are basically left wide open.
And he gives some pretty stark examples in the blog post, right?
Oh, yeah, he does. But before we get to those, I think we need to talk about this idea of worldview, because that's a big one for him. And it's not always easy to define.
Worldview. Okay, yeah, let's break that down. What exactly does he mean by that?
It's kind of like this. Think of it as your fundamental beliefs and values, the things that shape how you see the world, your place in it, your whole outlook, basically.
So it could be religious beliefs, but also like atheism, humanism, political ideologies, anything that really forms your core understanding of life.
Exactly. It's about those deeply held convictions that go beyond just your day-to-day opinions. And Clemens argues that this lack of protection for worldview creates some really alarming situations.
Okay, I'm intrigued, but a little nervous to hear these examples. What kind of situations are we talking about?
Well, imagine a landlord refusing to rent to someone just because they're an atheist, for example.
Oh, wow, okay. That's harsh.
Or what if a private school rejects a child because their family doesn't belong to any religion?
That's starting to get scary. It sounds like if those things happened, the person being discriminated against wouldn't really have much legal recourse.
You're catching on. Clemens is pointing out a very real vulnerability here. He says this gap in protection leaves people open to all sorts of bias and prejudice with very little legal defense.
All right, so we've got this lack of protection outside of work, especially when it comes to worldview, which we've now defined. Clemens goes on to talk about some actual court cases in Austria, right? I'm guessing these show how things play out in real life.
They do. He summarizes four key cases that really give us a glimpse into how Austrian courts are grappling with this whole worldview thing as a protected characteristic.
Okay, hit me with case number one.
All right, so the first one revolved around political affiliation as a potential worldview.
Ooh, that's an interesting one. Political beliefs can definitely be deeply held and shape someone's whole outlook. But did the court actually consider political affiliation as a worldview in this case?
They did. But there was a catch.
Always a catch.
Right. The court said that to count as a worldview, your political beliefs had to be more than just, like, belonging to a party. They had to be a deeply held, comprehensive system that shapes how you understand life and the world.
So basically just saying I'm a member of this party isn't enough. You got to prove that your political beliefs are, like, the foundation of your whole being.
Pretty much. And that's a pretty high bar to clear, you know? It makes you wonder how many people could actually meet that standard.
Yeah, that's tough. Did Clemens give any other examples of what did or didn't count as a worldview?
Get this, one of the cases involved COVID-19 skepticism.
Ooh, okay. So were skeptical views about COVID considered a worldview by the court?
Nope. The court was very clear. Criticizing COVID measures, even disagreeing with Austria's asylum laws, or calling out specific people, none of that counted as a worldview.
So they're really drawing a line in the sand here. It's not enough to just have strong opinions. They have to be, like, foundational to your whole existence.
It seems that way. It's like they're saying, look, everyone has opinions, but a worldview is something deeper, something more fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
And not everything qualifies.
Makes sense. Okay, what about the other cases? Did they give us any more clarity?
The third one Clemens brings up is particularly interesting because it involves the workplace, where, remember, their IS protection against discrimination based on worldview. This one was about a Muslim woman who wore a headscarf.
Okay, I'm listening.
So this woman claimed she was discriminated against during a job interview because the interviewer kept asking her about her headscarf.
Oh, so it wasn't about forcing her to remove it, but the questioning itself.
That's right. And the court actually sided with her. They said even repeatedly asking about the headscarf could be a form of discrimination.
Interesting. It suggests they were treating her differently because of her religious expression, even though they didn't outright tell her to remove it.
Exactly. And that's important, especially during job applications. Even that kind of subtle pressure can create a hostile environment.
Okay, I can see how that would be super uncomfortable. What about that last case? Was that about religious expression in the workplace too?
It was, but in a much more complex way. This one involved a Hindu worker who, because of his religious beliefs, refused to handle food containing meat, fish, or eggs.
Whoa, wait. Even if it was, like, in sealed containers?
Even then.
Mm-hmm.
He was totally willing to do all his other duties, but his refusal to touch those specific containers ultimately got him fired for persistent refusal to work. And this case actually went all the way to the Supreme Court.
Wow. Okay, given the specific nature of his refusal, I'm guessing this wasn't a simple case of you have to follow the rules no matter what. What did the Supreme Court decide?
They said that while the employer's instructions were generally reasonable, they also had an obligation to try to accommodate the worker's beliefs.
So it wasn't just a black and white obey or get fired situation.
Not exactly. The court said employers have a duty to find solutions that respect both the worker's beliefs and the needs of the workplace. But they also said the worker couldn't just demand special treatment or refuse any reasonable alternative.
Oh man, that's tricky. So it's like, we'll try to work with you, but you got to be flexible too.
It's a real balancing act. And get this, the Supreme Court didn't actually make a final decision on whether the dismissal was legal or not.
Are you serious? So even the highest court in the land couldn't figure this one out.
They basically punted it back down to the lower court saying, hey, you need to reconsider this case, taking into account this whole balance between accommodation and reasonable job expectations.
So even the Supreme Court was like, too complicated, you guys deal with it.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Which just goes to show how messy this whole issue can get.
Yeah, no kidding. These cases really highlight how nuanced these situations are. But remember, so far, we've only been talking about discrimination in the workplace, where Austria at least has some protections based on worldview. But Clemens' main point is about the lack of protection outside the workplace, right?
You got it. And it really doesn't mince words. He calls it a serious deficiency. And says it creates all sorts of problems for people.
All right, before we get to those specific problems, I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. So inside the workplace, I can legally challenge discrimination based on my worldview. But if that same discrimination happens when I'm, say, trying to rent an apartment, I'm out of luck. No protection under federal law.
That's the gist of it, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what Clemens is so fired up about. It creates this weird two-tiered system where some parts of your life are protected, but others are totally vulnerable.
It's kind of crazy to think that something as fundamental as your worldview can be used against you in some situations, but not others. Okay, so let's revisit those hypothetical examples Clemens gave. I know they're made up, but they really illustrate what could happen because of this legal gap. What were some of those again?
Oh, he goes all out. He talks about everything from housing and education to healthcare and even just accessing basic services. It's kind of a laundry list of what if scenarios. Yeah. Like, what if a landlord refuses to rent to someone because they're religious?
Yeah, I remember that one. What else?
What if a private school says nope to a kid because their family isn't part of any religion? Or a travel agency won't book a trip for someone because their beliefs clash with the tour's theme?
Okay, getting a little wild now.
He gets wilder. He even mentions stuff like, what if an insurance company denies coverage or a funeral home won't organize a non-religious ceremony?
So we're talking really fundamental stuff here. Housing, education, even end-of-life arrangements.
Right, and it doesn't stop there. He talks about nursing homes, restaurants refusing service, photographers not wanting to shoot events, hospitals denying certain treatments, even a library not stocking certain books.
Wow, okay, I'm definitely getting the point. It's like, this lack of protection could pop up anywhere outside of work. It's a little unsettling, honestly.
That's exactly what Clemens is going for, I think. He wants to show how pervasive this issue could be, how many everyday situations could be affected.
And he specifically calls out sexual orientation as another area with almost no protection outside the workplace, right?
Yep, he's very clear about that. He says a landlord could legally say no to someone just because they're LGBTQ plus with suppression.
Yeah.
No other reason needed according to the law as it stands.
That's, I mean, come on, that's just wrong. Let's bring this down to earth for a second. Let's say, hypothetically, a private school rejects a kid simply because their family isn't religious. Like, what can the parents even do in that situation? According to Clemens, at least.
Not a whole lot, sadly. At least not when it comes to the law.
Yeah.
He says they could try reasoning with the school, you know, appeal to their sense of fairness, or maybe try to get public pressure going, make it a PR nightmare for the school. But legally speaking, not much they could do.
It's crazy to think a kid could be denied an education because of something their family believes or doesn't believe. I mean, this isn't the Dark Ages.
That's precisely the problem Clemens is highlighting. This gap in the law leaves people vulnerable. It's basically saying their beliefs, their worldview, isn't worth protecting in these everyday scenarios.
Okay, I think we've definitely established that there's a problem here. But before we move on, I want to make sure we're not mixing things up. Clemens talks about grounds for discrimination and forms of discrimination. Are those different? I feel like we've been using them interchangeably.
Oh, good catch. They are different, and Clemens is really careful to separate them. He says it's super important to understand the difference between WHY someone is being discriminated against and how it's happening.
Okay, so the WHY is the grounds.
Exactly. Those are the characteristics we've been talking about this whole time. Gender, ethnicity, worldview, all that. It's the basis for the unfair treatment.
Gotcha. So what about the forms then? How does that fit in?
Well, Clemens lays out three main forms of discrimination: direct, indirect, and harassment. Direct discrimination is the most straightforward. It's when someone gets treated worse specifically because of one of those protected characteristics.
So like that headscarf example from earlier where the woman kept getting grilled about it during the interview, that would be direct.
Bingo. Now, indirect discrimination, that's a little trickier. It's when there's a rule or a practice that seems neutral on the surface, but it actually ends up disadvantaging people with a specific characteristic.
Okay, give me an example of that. It sounds kind of sneaky.
Imagine a company that says you have to be fluent in German to work there, even for jobs where language skills aren't that important.
Yeah, like I can see how that might be necessary for some jobs, but not all of them.
Exactly. And that kind of blanket rule could be considered indirect discrimination.
Yeah.
Because it would likely end up excluding way more immigrants, even though the rule doesn't explicitly say it's targeting them.
Oh, I see. So it's about the impact, not just the intention behind the rule. Sneaky indeed. What about harassment then? How does that work?
Well, Clemens defines it as any behavior that's connected to one of those protected characteristics, but it's unwanted and creates a hostile or offensive environment.
So it could be like offensive jokes or gestures based on someone's worldview, even if they're not actually fired or denied a service.
Yep. It can be verbal, physical, even visual. And it's definitely a form of discrimination, even if it's not as concrete as getting fired or denied housing.
Okay, so we've got the grounds, the reason, and the forms, the Heisho W of discrimination. And it seems like Austrian law covers a lot of both, at least when it comes to the workplace. But as we've been saying, the real problem is outside of work, right? Does Clemens talk about any exceptions to this lack of protection?
He does. There are a couple of specific situations he calls out. For example, he says some jobs just inherently require certain traits that might automatically exclude some people.
And he uses a pretty bold example to illustrate this.
Yeah, he brings up the example of a woman who wears a burqa saying she wouldn't be able to work as a judge or a pilot.
Okay, yeah, I can see how those jobs have some very specific requirements, whether it's about appearance or communication, that might be hard to reconcile with wearing a burqa.
That's his argument, at least.
Yeah.
It's like, in some cases, what seems like discrimination is actually justified because it's tied to the very nature of the job. Not everyone's going to agree with that, of course.
Yeah, right. What other exceptions does he mention?
He specifically talks about religious organizations.
Yeah, that makes sense. I can see how religious institutions might want to hire people who share their beliefs.
And Austrian law allows for that. Clemens explains that religious organizations can discriminate based on religion or worldview when they're hiring for certain positions.
So, like, a Catholic church can legally say, we're only considering Catholic candidates for this priest position.
Pretty much. But he does point out that this exception only works if the organization is truly based on religious principles, and if the person's religion or worldview is actually a requirement for the job.
So it can't just be an excuse to discriminate for no reason.
Exactly. It has to be legitimate, connected to the core function of the organization.
Okay, so those are two exceptions, job requirements and religious groups. Anything else?
Well, he ends the post with a bit of a call to action. He says that humanist organizations, like the one he's part of, are really pushing for stronger protection against worldview discrimination everywhere, not just at work.
Makes sense.
And he points out that they often team up with LGBTQ plus advocates who are also fighting for more protection.
Yeah, I can see the connection there. Both groups often face discrimination based on their deeply held beliefs or identities. It's like a natural alliance.
It's a good reminder that these issues are all connected, and sometimes joining forces is the best way to make real change.
For sure. It's about recognizing that everyone deserves to be treated with dignity and respect, no matter what they believe or who they are. But Clemens also brings up something else that I found really interesting. He talks about the tension between protecting against discrimination and individual freedom.
Yes. This whole idea of private autonomy, basically the right to choose who you interact with, do business with, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like we want to protect people from being treated unfairly, but we also don't want to completely eliminate personal choice. It's a tough balance.
And Clemens doesn't shy away from that. He actually points out how increasing discrimination protection could clash with this idea of private autonomy.
So, like, if I own a business, shouldn't I be able to choose who I work with, even if my reasons aren't politically correct?
That's the question. He uses the example of contract law people generally have the right to choose their contractual partners.
Yeah.
But where do we draw the line between that right and the need to prevent discrimination? It's messy.
Okay, I'm starting to see how complicated this gets. And Clemens doesn't pretend to have all the answers, right?
Nope, not at all. He's just raising the issue as something we need to think about. It's not a simple good guys versus bad guys situation. There are a lot of competing values at play here.
It's like, on the one hand, we don't want to force people to go against their beliefs. But on the other hand, we don't want to allow discrimination to run rampant.
Exactly. It's a delicate balance. And Clemens doesn't try to offer a simple solution. He just wants to make sure we're aware of the tension.
Well, mission accomplished. He's definitely given us a lot to chew on today. This whole deep dive into Austrian discrimination law has been super informative, even though a bit unnerving at times. We've uncovered some pretty big gaps in protection, especially when it comes to worldview and discrimination outside of work.
It really is. Like, where does personal freedom end and discrimination begin? It's not always clear-cut. Clemens brings up this example of a photographer who doesn't want to shoot same-sex weddings for religious reasons.
Oh, yeah. I remember reading about those cases.
Exactly. And it's like, do we side with the photographer's right to refuse service? Or do we prioritize the couple's right to equal treatment?
See, that's what I mean about tough questions. It's not always easy to see what the right answer is.
And that's why this private autonomy thing is so tricky. Clemens is basically saying, hey, we need to think about these trade-offs. We can't just blindly charge ahead with more and more discrimination protection without considering the potential downsides.
So we got to strike a balance, basically.
That's the million-dollar question. How do we protect individuals from unfair treatment without trampling on other people's freedoms? And Clemens doesn't pretend to have a magic formula, you know?
Well, he's definitely laid out the problem pretty clearly, that's for sure. This whole conversation has been really eye-opening, even though, honestly, a bit disheartening at times. I mean, we've uncovered some pretty big gaps in Austrian law, especially when it comes to this whole worldview thing outside of the workplace.
It's a good reality check, I think. Even in a country like Austria, where there's a pretty decent legal system, there are still these areas where things are murky, where people are vulnerable. It's like, the work is never really done.
Yeah, and it seems like when it comes to worldview discrimination specifically outside of work, it's still very much a Wild West out there.
Pretty much. Huh? Which is why it's so important for people to be aware of their rights, even when those rights are limited.
Right.
And to speak up, you know, challenge injustice wherever they see it. Because if we don't, who will?
Preach.
Yeah.
So, dear listener, if you're out there navigating life in Austria, remember this. Your rights and protections can change depending on where you are and what you're doing. And when it comes to stuff like worldview discrimination outside of work, where legal protection is kind of weak, it's even more important to be informed, to advocate for change, to challenge unfair treatment whenever you encounter it.
Exactly. Knowledge is power, right?
Yeah.
And the more people know about these issues, the more we can push for a better, fairer system for everyone.
Couldn't agree more. It's not about playing the blame game or pointing fingers. It's about recognizing that we all have a role to play in creating a society where everyone feels safe and respected, no matter what they believe or who they are. That's the kind of Austria we should all be working towards.
All said.
And on that note, we'll leave you to ponder all this.
Mm.
Until next time, stay curious, keep learning, and remember, even when things seem messy and complicated, we all have the power to make a difference. Even small actions can create ripples that lead to big changes down the line. So don't underestimate your impact.